Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
African Union, we apologize in advance. Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run, and thank you for joining us wherever you are tuned in from. Thank you for tuning in to Eagle FM this time of the day, and as usual, your favorite duo is on air from 4 to 6. That's Helmut and Dwight here on Eagle FM.
And guys, don't worry, we won't be giving anyone a bloody nose today, just like we realized yesterday that, we walked away not just with, well, with a broken nose, probably, but today's discussion has more of a weird, okay, it's not weird because we've known it has been happening.
It's not weird.
But it is also, Helmut,
I have my description of it, but finish first.
But we have to look at positions of strength here. This is, remember, international relations we're talking about.
Yeah.
International relations is riddled with examples of poor international relations and foreign affairs.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, yeah, we got a whole bunch of wars that are still giving us an indicator of what happens when poor international relations exist. And these are the particular kinds of positions that we can analyze through what the AU is trying to achieve with their own, what was this? Was this a, this wasn't a resolution, right? This was a decision. Or was it just a,
I think it's a declaration. Just go to
Just
go to page 210.
Yeah, it was a declaration. Yeah, I'm trying to get there because I remember it first went from decisions to resolutions then declarations. So, yeah, it's a resolution almost.
It's a resolution.
Yeah. Okay, so they put resolutions at the end. So it's decisions, declarations, then resolutions. So, our discussion today, guys, has a look at how developing countries, especially African countries under the AU umbrella, what's our feeling? I can only talk about vibes from an African perspective because Africans have technically not sanctioned each other.
They have a donated headquarter. How can they sanction each other?
I'm telling you that. I'm just laying the foundation so that our listeners out there can listen to...
Sanction entails economic strength.
Exactly. That's the reason why I said also in the small intro, our talk today has to start from a position of understanding power dynamics. Yeah, that's the phrase. The power dynamics. Who sits with power, who's doing what the most, and ultimately what do you want to achieve. It was also the scenario, Hamoud, of... and I also realized that there is actually an element of power dynamics also in, remember the discussion we did back in 2024 about lobbying? Power dynamics also is present there. Campaign funding for a political candidate to become president.
Yeah.
It's also power dynamics. You can also see power dynamics, for example, in a discussion like, my goodness, you can even go to a primary school or a high school and you'll find power dynamics there. And that was the most brutal power dynamics ever in your life, guys. If you survived high school, Helmut, you can make it in politics. If you survived high school. Look, my high school is not the squeakiest, cleanest. I probably might still have some teachers left at St. Dora's High School, but when I landed there, I was like, yay! This is a different kind of an environment. So, power dynamics is, which is a human particular, if you can call it one of those intangible but very visible, think of it as a power cable that connects everybody, but the power flows from one side. You can't transmit the power back. Okay, probably if you had fists and you knew how to use your fists, but yeah, sure. that's probably the only other way to express, your dissatisfaction at talking point.
Yeah.
And we're not talking about a customer serve, what you call it, an unhappy customer or dissatisfied customer with a call center. No, we're actually talking about sorting out what is a grievance to you. But today's discussion, guys, has been a thing that the African Union countries have been dealing with for a long time. And it's also a scenario where, in just like with the declaration or the resolution on slave trade in all its forms, and for slave trade and colonial, slave trade and colonialism in all its forms, that specific conversation we had back then, Helmut, back in last month, speaks to this particular resolution as well. It literally speaks to this resolution. Because our neighbor, what happened with Zimbabwe, Zimbabwe is still sanctioned. Look, I would really love it if Zimbabwe was not sanctioned. But the sanctions didn't come from the United States per se, because that's technically the only country that is going around sanctioning people.
Mm-hmm.
The sanctions worked in a very different way to how we got to understand sanctions today. The sanctions came from a former colonial power, the UK.
Yep.
It was the UK. It wasn't even in America's interest.
Well, who was the boss in terms of international political and economic influence at the time?
For a good 150 years? No, 200 years. Because if you take 50 years from the 1700s, the whole 100 years of the 1800s, and 50 years into the 20th century.
Yeah.
200 years, it was the UK. For 200 years, they dominated stuff.
Every country that's talking about colonialism today has their discussion either is directly or indirectly
at
linked
the UK.
To the British.
Yeah.
And the one thing I like about the British is that it's also the very same reason why I wouldn't go on a heist with an Englishman, because they will leave evidence everywhere. After that heist, I'm talking about the British Museum. Who steals stuff and then labels it?
What you've got to understand, what they also did.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also what's evident in, for example, like in Germany.
Yeah.
You heard most about the other, the famous museum, the Humboldt. The Humboldt Museum is the one that had part of the Benin bronze collection as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, who took the Benin bronzes were English soldiers when they decided to invade the Benin kingdom. No, it's not the country of Benin, guys. It's actually a province in Nigeria by the name Benin, which raises the same particular argument between Greece and Macedonia, where Greece was arguing Macedonia needs to change its name because they've got a province in Greece with the name Macedonia, and thus Macedonia became North Macedonia. So Benin probably has to change its name, Elmwood. But anyway, the Benin bronzes, which is a kingdom in, if you can think about it like in a Namibian context, it's considered a communal land area in Nigeria today. And the discussion about the Benin bronzes was that the Benin bronzes, Helmut, was like a representation of every period, of every king that they had in that territory.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go look at the Benin bronzes today, the old photos that exist, because when I had that conversation back in 2024 on my Sunday morning take, I discovered in preparation for the program that the Benin bronzes wasn't just a decorative thing hanging, you know, around the
they main, were more than just arts.
The main palace, main palace of the king, because the king had a different name, but he didn't use the word king.
Yeah.
But you could think of him as a king. And inside that palace, every king's rule was identified with these bronze. It looks like a shield. It looks like a plate of bronze, but it was literally
like an armor plate.
Yeah, but it wasn't. But armor obviously goes around you.
Yeah.
Just think of it like being the size of a man's torso. But the thing represents each particular sort of like dynasty or reign.
So it was a record in a way.
It was their record of them being the people of that particular area. Now, I know the story from what happened from the confiscation, the conflict.
Yeah.
Because the story that is highlighted specifically in the literature I read was that it was an army soldier that was concocting a way of getting to those bronze plates. So what happened? You've heard the thing of false flag? The term false flag?
Yeah.
So he concocted a false flag story. But before we continue...
False flag on the other side of the bridge.
We quickly take a short break.
At ShopRite, we've got everything you need for baby and more at the lowest prices. Save big on baby essentials like 36, 42, 45, 50, 58 or 68 Pampers disposable nappies for only 209 Namibian dollars 99 per pack. And Jolly Tots baby walker, all variants for only 299 Namibian dollars 99 each. Visit your nearest ShopRite and save big on deals for baby. Only available until 3 May 2026. ShopRite, lower prices you can trust always.
Fikama, katuka uyekenda do dakura. The ShopRite's big low price carnival. Okokuna enda do dakura. No shoyo, eku piforoshimariwa. Wakurila, mona oiland for mangashi. Emilita, omathera heari. No mirongo na noto. Homegrown cooking oil blend. Eriavari, dorangashike. Gentora, omirongo hamano. Oshoyo, eritera dirimbari do prox oros squash concentrate. Dirimo, domaruja yoroka. Otoranda, gentora mirongo na tu. Nahamano, nesenda. Omirongo wei nungwei. Eshe ingwe. Enda dueti. Odinongu chupio. Omafiko mlongo amei. Odura oil twei. Oko ShopRite. Apuke, ashike, otokara una, omito yoku findana po, kamwe pa mutoroli, oma verabari nomi ombona no, wo trolley dashes, landa ashike shingwe, shomo yetapo, ili tatu oyote yukufa ombinga, ufindane, na ShopRite big low price carnival, oma fia vano ha, otakuru mama fikuwa heali ya juni, odura OFA, ema ngono marandura vano, otakashikuruwa.
Welcome back, and false flag.
Yeah, so, he concocted a false flag scenario by going and telling his commanding officers at that time that this particular group of people there in the Kingdom of Benin back in the 1800s, and this is how the actual colonization of Nigeria began, that there was going to be some sort of imminent attack from these people, even though...
From the natives to the British guys.
From the people of that Benin Kingdom, even though there was cordial... Not friendly, but cordial relationship, relations.
Yeah.
Meaning, there was a clear channel of communication between the British army that was there, or the colonial army guys. They knew, and the people of that kingdom knew, you know, they knew about each other. They had dealt with each other. But because this one guy saw the copper hanging.
He wanted to get to the copper, but he needed an excuse.
He needed to get to the copper. So, false flag scenario was concocted. Attack happens because the attack apparently happened like early morning or between midnight and sunrise when the sun comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Attack happens and they confiscate all the, literally the Benin bronzes that were hanging. And what it was described like was that whole hall, Helmut, if you think about it, like in a monarchy sense, like you probably would have seen in many particular sort of like medieval contexts,
mm-hmm.
is that instead of having a parliament building,
yeah.
Okay, think about the cabinet office at State House where the ministers go to, but you make it this massive, like, cathedral-like structure.
Yeah.
And then the king sits there at the point, or the monarch sits at the end. You come in from this side. People are sitting and standing on each side of...
You know,
of
the king's councils, sort of.
Basically, yeah. And against the walls, apparently, these bronze plaques were hanging. Yeah, bronze, because it's literally bronze. Because bronze is a mixture of two metals.
Yeah, it's iron or nickel or iron. There's iron there, because I always confuse them. Iron and
I think it's iron and copper, maybe.
Iron and zinc, that's brass.
Iron and zinc is brass.
There's that must be iron and copper, or iron and nickel.
One of the two. So these bronzes were hanging there, but these bronzes were literally, if you think about it, it was a detail or record keeping of every monarch of the specific territory. Now,
so basically, every piece had its own story in terms of the lineage of monarchy.
It had a historical account of everything. And when people obviously use the term, especially like, you know, political historians, they will always cite how colonialism committed erasure or cultural erasure.
Yeah.
Now, the argument, Helmut, in a European context that you will immediately identify from the European context is what the Romans did to the Europeans.
Yeah.
Because the Romans came with a very ugly but very straightforward and a very brutal approach to colonialism. What they said was, let's go and, what was that word they used? That phrase, it was literally like saying, let's go make people of the barbarians. These, the people that you would find here in what is now Hungary / Austria,
mm-hmm.
What is now France, what is Germany and the Czech Republic and Slovakia, in that specific neighborhood of what you can think of as Europe. Because the Romans actually only reached from England, from Hadrian's Wall, which is literally the border that the Romans built. Literally, they built a wall, guys, across from one sea to the other sea.
The Hadrian's dedication.
Wall. Literally, but you guess how big the whole wall was.
How big was it? So I can jump on it.
Yeah, you can jump over the wall. So they literally built, their territory ran from Hadrian's Wall in England to just here outside. I think it's just between France and Belgium. And if you pull a line like diagonally down to Greece, because they weren't far in here, Austria, Hungary, they weren't far even in, they tried to fully conquer Germany and Belgium and the Netherlands, but it was a bit too far because you obviously can see that your governance lines become too thin.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously they decided to expand here into the Middle East. That's how they got there to Jesus, and we got to hear about the injustice of what happened to Jesus alongside with the Jews at the time deciding to choose Barnabas, a known rapist and killer, to be freed above Jesus.
Yeah, well, it's happening today. Epstein guys are running the country.
Which is very true.
Yeah, you go shoplifting, you go to jail.
Exactly.
Molest children, president.
Or you are protesting in Berlin and you get arrested.
Yeah, that.
You just protest. That's all you do. You protest.
Just protest.
You just arrested. Protest. You get arrested. You get thrown in jail. Now, when you look at this particular scenario, the Romans literally came. They were the pretext, the standard. They are the standard of colonialism, the Romans. So when everyone, if you look at it, at the Romans from a context of glory, which the Europeans love doing, because they are so proud of being, having been conquered by the Romans. But then in essence, when you look at what the Romans did, the Romans came with erasure, Helmut. And they came with installing their ways and customs on people. Now, think of the same thing primarily. Instead of fighting war, this is our discussion, guys. You've got sanctions to get to an end. And the sanctions are used to change a government.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, you voted for this government, Helmut. How would you feel if someone unilaterally decides to put sanctions on you or your government of the day just because this other country doesn't like
your current president's policies against them? It's mostly about economic interest.
And we saw what happened with Venezuela. It's literally where ConocoPhillips, the discussion that the particular temp case study that you keep citing, ConocoPhillips.
Yeah.
Start from ConocoPhillips, because ConocoPhillips is, their engagement with Venezuela was from the days of Chavez.
Yeah.
If I remember.
Yeah, it was.
Because Chavez came through after ConocoPhillips already had its contracts. Chavez came through and he came with this nationalization template. And who else was inadvertently influenced? Which other countries were influenced with coercive economic measures? There was Iran, which is now obviously on the table, the template. But there was also Chile. The president that was voted in for.
Mm-hmm.
What was the guy's name? Not the general that toppled him over. That was helped by the CIA. What was the guy?
Salvador Allende was.
It's that guy.
Salvador Allende is the one that was toppled.
Allende. So Allende.
Yeah, and then Augusto Pinochet takes over and Brogos full dictatorship from day one.
And then guess what? Guess what's the funny thing? The same thing that happened in Iran. The same thing that happened in Iraq. The Americans helped install someone that was not voted in by the electorate of that country.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Americans go and have this whole public relations thing against the guy that they install. Just think about it, Helmut.
Against?
They installed Mossadam, the Americans.
They did. And they actually helped him topple the guy that
was voted in. They literally helped the current government of Iran, as you guys know it, ne, who was literally installed with the assistance of the Americans against the Shah of Iran. The same Shah that the Americans are now trying to help to get back. The son of the Shah. The Pahlavi guy.
Oh, yeah. Wait, didn't the Pahlavi dynasty fall after the 1979 Iranian revolution?
Yeah, because the dad took his kids. Mm-hmm. That guy, the son, that's now in America.
Ah, yeah.
He was Muslim in Egypt.
Yeah.
Furthering his piloting career.
Of course he did.
He was being trained, the Iranian Air Force was being trained by, or Iranian pilots were being trained by the Egyptian Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
Homeboy was in Egypt at the time. His mom and dad decided to fly out of the country when the toppling happens in 1979.
Yeah.
Who helped the Islamists in Iran come to power? It was the CIA.
Jeez.
It was the CIA.
I thought it was just because of, those angry students that just decided to go on a march,
go and read again.
Tear their way through the embassy.
Go and read again from Mossadegh, Hamoud. What happened? Mossadegh's issue was against the British petroleum companies, right?
Yeah.
But specifically BP. So.
Then it was Anglo-Iranian oil, in theory, but in practice it was more like Anglo oil.
Yeah. So the Brits, because Mossadegh wanted nationalization of resources to help build up this country, I mean, that's what we're also technically talking about in Namibia, in a sense, that's only from the opposition parties, not from the full ruling party. Only the opposition parties calling for nationalization.
Well, first of all, if you're going to do that, get an army first.
No.
A very good one.
Helmut, that's where you end up with Sudan.
Look,
the discussion around nationalization
is
it's technically a discussion of, if you go and look at being self-sustainable, the South Africans are there to help you with a whole history lesson, because they were sanctioned. They were sanctioned in Southern Africa.
Yeah.
They were sanctioned. But they were exposed to the two oil crises that I explained. The one of, I think, 1984, the year I was born. And then there was another one that happened, I think it's the same one, the 1971 oil crisis as well. Because much of the oil obviously still comes out of the middle, that specific neighborhood of the Strait of Hormuz. But when you go and look in history about nationalization and the particular goals of a country's developmental pathway, in many scenarios, the answer was not about having please concede all ownership to the new government that came out of colonialism.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first thing that happened to Egypt under, what was that, the second president? No, he wasn't the first president. What was that guy's name, the general? The tall guy. It was the Suez Canal crisis. Where, guess what, once again, the French and the British, always the British, instigated the Israelis to attack the Egyptians. They instigated the Israelis to attack the Egyptians. The Israeli army advanced so far, Helmut, in the Sinai Peninsula. It's that little bridge. Okay, the Suez Canal literally runs through that piece of land that they built. And on the other side of the canal, in the Middle East, in Asia, is the Sinai Peninsula that is also Egyptian territory.
Mm-hmm.
The Israelis advanced so far, Helmut, up and until the bank of the canal. That's how far they had advanced. Because the Israelis were told by the Brits and the French, those guys want to nationalize the Suez Canal. But here's the issue with the Suez Canal. The Suez Canal, yes, it was built by the French and the British together. The company, which is an SOE, supposedly, was registered in France and in London, but it was run by the ministers and the prime ministers of both countries. I'll just let it hang there. An SOE that's not your SOE was in charge of a company or a piece of infrastructure that can earn your country a lot of money in trade.
Okay. This is, when it, look, power is my favorite topic.
Mm.
Because every time that we talk about power, we like to look at it from a political standpoint. But I believe now my point of view is to understand power. You have to look at it on a very simpler, more societal level,
yeah.
Like the owner of the ball growing up example. Like that's an excellent example.
Okay, yeah, that is pretty good.
Like
there's not even any economics involved.
Yeah, there's no economics involved, but you can already see that
there's a societal structure.
Exactly, there's a societal structure forming
There's a hierarchy in the street.
Now, what that very simple example shows you is that the one who has leverage tends to have an upper hand in negotiations.
Yeah.
It is now I know it's very easy to just say, you know what, this is against international law, it's against the UN Charter, which is what the African Union is referencing on their basically condemnation on sanctions on all those things. But yes, in theory, it makes a lot of sense.
Mm.
So does trickle down economy.
Yes.
It makes a lot of sense on paper. Give rich people tax breaks, and when you reduce the amount of tax you are giving them, they will use that money they would be paying you to, you know, to expand their businesses and therefore employ more people. That's in theory.
Now let's go to practice. In actuality, it doesn't materialize.
No, they just invest that money in stock buyback, inflate the stock price.
Or hold the money in the bank and don't do anything.
And it's not in circulation, the economy is not going anywhere. It's unintended consequences.
Yeah.
Ronald Reagan, didn't he run on the entire idea of, you know what, let's give a bunch of rich people tax breaks and therefore they will use the money that they would be paying us. Now, they would be paying us to expand their businesses and employ more people. I have one question. How about, you are the government. Those people are your responsibility. The private entities' responsibilities are shareholders.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised, and actually, I don't blame the corporations for basically turning around and doing everyone without Vaseline. The thing is, once you begin to understand, look, corporations' responsibilities are to shareholders. You are a government. The people are your responsibility.
Guys, I apologize. Now, if you caught on to that joke, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, guys.
Yeah. If you caught on that joke, you and I, let's be friends. Team Dirty Mind. Now, here's the thing. They could have just collected those taxes and then create opportunities for the people.
Yeah.
So they decided, you know what? Don't give us the money because, like what? We don't have the thinking capacity or mental acuity or to create opportunity. So just keep the profit and you create the opportunities.
Yeah.
So in theory, it makes a lot of sense. So the same thing can be said about the African Union's condemnation of, cohesive diplomatic relations of, it's not even diplomatic relations at this point. Basically, bigger countries with bigger diplomatic, especially economic muscles, they have been known to bully small countries.
And we are seeing it now.
Yeah, we are seeing that now.
I mean, how much did you hear of the aircraft carrier by the U.S.? That's hanging outside. It's going to hang outside Namibia's national waters.
For?
The USS George H. No, George W. H. or H. W. Bush.
Where's it going?
I don't know. I read a lovely, article by one of the other media companies here in Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, What the hell is this thing hanging outside our economic? It's hanging outside our national waters in a special economic zone,
mm-hmm.
Of national waters. It's like an extension to your national waters.
Yeah.
That
because you have your national waters, you have an exclusive economic zone.
Yeah. Then it's just right there, and then you get international waters right outside that channel. It's gonna come and hang there, supposedly just hang there. It's apparently, according to the NDF at the time when they were asked by this particular journalist who I know about, why is this major ship going to hang outside our national waters? Now, the Americans have tried another tactic like that before, and we've seen it back before 3 January, specifically with Venezuela.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they bought diplomacy.
They were hanging outside your national waters. Because in your national waters, it would be deemed as an invasion. Mm-hmm. So they were hanging outside your national waters.
Yeah.
So we're already seeing some coercive activities happening.
Is it possible those guys are just headed to Iran?
I don't care, Hamoud.
Yeah.
I don't.
Hang on a second. So that means the country's defense is aware of their presence.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, then they're good. Now.
No, Helmut. Oh. It's an aircraft carrier.
It's an aircraft
carrier. It's a nuclear aircraft carrier, Helmut.
Yeah, that thing is massive. You can't run that thing on diesel.
Yes, Helmut. That thing, but why is that thing going to hang out there without even doing any grocery shopping in Balfour's Bay?
Grocery shopping, first of all, it's nuclear, so I appreciate the distance.
No, I'm not asking it to come and dock. I'm not asking it to come and dock. The thing is just peculiar. Why is it sailing around the southern tip of Africa?
I'm pretty sure the defense guys, that's the thing about basically the defense industry. Even if you, ask them, it's either they will give you a cooked up answer or they'll be like, no, that's a national security thing. You know, we're not allowed to disclose that. That's the thing about defense.
Or they're probably just coming to hang there in some sort of a posture of, look, I've also got muscles. I can also show it here to you, Southern Africa, specifically to South Africa, for some reason. South Africa had most the exercise last year.
With
Iran, China, and Russia.
Yeah.
The naval exercise. And yeah. India. India was also part of the exercise. And then, for some reason, local South African politicians were going on about, why didn't you guys send back the Iranian ship, the warships, not to participate in the exercise? And the concern here is, now this is also where you see a chasm or a split in the politics, the Pan-African politics happening.
Yeah.
The South Africans are now realizing they need the rest of Africa. I am so glad. I am so glad. Okay, if you go on in the street, if you ever go visit South Africa, I'm at one another time, the ordinary people don't care if the rest of Africa exists or not in South Africa. However, if you meet the politicians or you listen to the things that the politicians engage in, specifically like at the Pan-African Parliament sessions, obviously there's obviously going to be one later this year coming about. If you hear about their participation at these platforms, the South African politicians are trying to convince the rest of Africa to invest in South Africa. Let me say it again. Like last year, what happened last year was that there were these joint Pan-African Parliament sessions with the South African Parliament, and then there was the Pan-African Parliament's own meetings, meaning the people, the MPs had to be there for like two and a half weeks in South Africa. One was in Johannesburg, and then the other one, they had to go to Cape Town for a full week engagement. So that second week engagement, the one where they were dealing with the South African Parliament directly as a Pan-African Parliament, was a conversation of them trying to convince the Africans, the rest of the Africans, to make South Africa or to identify South Africa as the sort of like the lead African nation on the continent. But we already saw an issue with what happened with the suggestion through BRICS to make South Africa the sort of like Security Council designate on the UN Security Council, with Ethiopia going like, yo, whoa. No.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that. And who was the other African country that also said no? I think it was Morocco as well. Morocco or one of the other guys in Central Africa. But the concern is also we can't make AU a member of the Security Council because the AU presidency or whatever that leadership role, which rotates between the 54 nation states. If there is one country that antagonized, what's his name? Let's say these NATO guys. And now that guy becomes president of AU. Does that now mean AU is now at war with the NATO guys? Even though the other 54 the other 53 member states are not at war.
Mm-hmm.
Or is this going to be, are we going to just have awkward relationships, you know, into perpetuity from Africa's perspective, meaning we speak fire, but our actions are like a poodle.
Do we speak fire though?
No, we don't spit fire. We don't even, okay, we spit fire when Mia Motley from Trinidad and Tobago is speaking. And she's not even African. She's not even African. She's not even African. But we get inspired by Mia Motley and we then say, yeah, we support you. So, yeah, we technically don't spit fire.
After Cuba, you see, after the toppling of Maduro in 3 January, what happened was Cuba was, Venezuela was a major oil supplier to Cuba.
Yeah.
Yeah, now, after that toppling, obviously, with the destabilization, which is still basically going on right now in Venezuela, one thing that, one of those countries that were basically caught in a very terrible crossfire, and I think that was the purpose, was Cuba. Because now their main energy source was undergoing through some domestic tensions with, courtesy of the United States.
Yeah.
Now, because of that, Cuba had a blackout.
Yep.
They had a blackout.
They actually had forced, what was that thing that South Africans have? Load shedding.
Yeah, they had major blackout, and this is countrywide.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, when you don't have oil in your country, the blackout, all the service stations are just up and running, you don't see the consequences of having an oil blackout. But thank God I have never had to experience that, because I started understanding just how important oil is after that, during the, from February, March, April, until I think, from February, March, it wasn't until I think, about last month, that's when, Russia.
Oh, you're talking about the scenes that happened here in Windhoek. End of last month.
I'm still in Cuba.
Okay.
It wasn't until, no country would actually go to Cuba and take an oil tanker to Cuba.
Mm.
It was Russia. Now Russia went through the blockade. Why?
I wonder why.
Why? For two reasons. One, from the look of things, Putin and Trump are homies.
Well, there's other theory, Hamoud, about that relationship.
Uh-huh. Which is a very interesting relationship. But one thing that I find very interesting about the Democrats and Republicans in the U.S. is that when one comes to power, China is the enemy, Russia is a friend.
Mm.
And when they switch, Russia becomes the enemy, China becomes a friend. And it's it really baffles me I can't help but think what the heck is going on here, but it's none of my business. But the thing is, one thing that you can see here is that it's very easy to go to war with a country that cannot defend itself.
Yeah.
Now, how do you make sure that you don't have competition in terms of military strength? Make sure that all countries around you, they don't have the means to basically build themselves to the level of military strength where they can compete with you. That's the level China is right now. And that's why China is the bad guy through and through.
Mm.
Yeah, it has, well, you can, look, even if it has remotely have to do with Taiwan, it has nothing to do with Taiwan. It's just that...
Oh no, the Americans agreed to China policy back in the 1980s.
Yeah.
It was exactly that point, Helmut. Why, okay, what happened in the 1980s, and I know you remember this part, is that the America, what's his name, Nixon or was it Reagan? One of them had to find a third pole. Because you just had Soviet Union sitting in the Security Council across from everyone else. Then you had France, the UK, and the Americans. So technically, you could see that this relationship was 3-1. So obviously, UN resolutions would go like all over the place, because if the Soviets didn't like what these three guys, which were the Allied forces, as they called themselves in the Second World War, anything that these three guys proposed, the Soviets didn't like it, the thing didn't move forward, the topic or the subject or the proposal.
Mm-hmm.
So the Americans thought that they could bring in a third spanner into the whole toolbox of things regarding negotiations, approaches, global politics, global development. They brought in, they went and made a deal with China because China didn't have a Security Council seat up until the 1980s. So they approached China, and then China laid forth its particular proposal by saying, listen, then you've got to recognize the One China policy. You've got to recognize the One China policy. Mm-hmm. You've got to identify that we are a specific, unique country with a unique identity. Things get said, yes, you know, abracadabra, there you find China being the first Security Council member.
Now, who was not there from the beginning?
From the beginning. Yeah. Who was not there from 1945 when the UN was constituted. But they were deemed an enemy in the Korean War.
Yeah.
So now we see this template showing up in 2026, like you highlighted. If one US president shows up, suddenly China is the best buddy, but Russia is the most evilest place. And when Donald Trump comes back in power, suddenly now Russia is the best buddy and
China is the evil one.
And China is now being, you know, vilified for whatever they're trying to do. Which, in reality, Helmut, is not very good, because Yanis Varoufakis told a woman back in 2024 very, very calmly in a New York engagement he had. She stood up, you know, it's one of those public lectures that, you know, famous or well-known people go and do in parts of the world. You pay this person to come to you to be a guest speaker of a subject matter that they are an expert in.
Mm-hmm.
And you invite people to, you know, to come and listen to him. So Varoufakis was there in New York. And he did this presentation, and it was specifically about China. And he did this presentation, and this lady gets up in the crowd, because it's now questions and answer sessions. She goes like, yeah, I don't like what China is doing. And he asks her, what do you mean you don't like what China is doing? Well, they're building bridges and roads and hospitals in Africa. And, you know, I just don't like it. And he asked her, what's wrong with the roads? What's wrong with building bridges, roads, and hospitals? Well, I mean, it just doesn't look well. And then he asked her the opposite of that question. Okay.
First she says, I know we're doing the same thing.
Yeah. But he asked her the question of, okay, so would you like the template of being shot at or being bombed, meaning the template of colonialism?
Yeah.
Or do you like the template of soft power being used or pursued? Because soft power is like, hey, listen, my guy, I'd like to help you up, but I've got this development money there, and I want my company from my country to come and do the project for you, but I know that you need the road. I know you're dealing with anti-corruption issues.
Yeah.
So how about my country does the job for you? I give the money, but that company does the job. Is that okay? Yeah, it's okay. That's what Namibia is doing. Because Namibia said yes. You can't say yes. You can't say no. Otherwise, where would you get money like that, Helmut?
No, you won't.
No, you won't. So, the soft power reigns. Because if we have to understand, and this is now the big issue, specifically what Europe is dealing with, Europe's legacy of colonialism. It's most America that is using sanctions.
Yeah.
Europe's legacy of colonialism on the continent is unfortunately ugly business. The Belgian king can apologize into infinity and beyond. It won't bring back a Patrice Lumumba.
Nope.
It won't bring it back. It won't bring that man back. It won't bring back the influence, specifically that the CIA has wreaked havoc on the African continent.
Yeah.
It won't bring that situation back. Many people think that if we now look at how Namibia's independence came about, specifically like Namibia, how much it was literally two presidents. One president was against us. They were supporting literally the South Africans. And just because of his death, the next president now flips over and now realizes, oh no, we need a PR management situation here about our role in the colonial past of what was Britain's colonial histories on the African continent. If JFK did not pass away, okay, he's a fellow Catholic just like me, but if he didn't pass away, and he was trying to mend situation between himself and, what's the guy from Moscow? Was it Khrushchev?
It was Nikita Khrushchev.
Yeah, Khrushchev. Because it was the first time they could call each other, those two guys. I think him or it was Nixon. They could call each other directly.
The Cold War.
Yeah, during the Cold War. They could literally call each other.
The Cuban Missile Crisis, that's Khrushchev JFK.
After the missile crisis, they installed a telephone line out of the White House to the Kremlin. These guys can call each other directly.
Man, the things we take for granted.
If you guys did not know this, go and read up on it. After the Cuban Missile Crisis,
so it was just a presidential thing at the time.
It was literally one of the things like the, you know, let's become best buddies after the Cuban Missile Crisis. It was literally installing that telephone that connects the White House directly to the Kremlin.
Yeah.
So that these two presidents can talk directly to each other.
You know why military strength is, you know why military strength is needed in international relations? Between Lebanon and Iran, who does the U.S. and Israel negotiate? Who are they negotiating with?
Currently, right now, if we think about it for Lebanon, they're not talking to Hezbollah from Lebanon.
Yeah.
They are talking to the, how can I call it, the multi-party government coalition of Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is an ugly history in Lebanon, Hamoud, I have to also share with you.
Yeah.
One of the ugly sides was literally that the long-lasting Lebanese civil war of the 1980s that ended here in 1990-something.
Yeah.
Guess who caused it? Yasser Arafat and the PLA, the Palestinian Liberation Army.
Why?
It's a funny thing that, for example, like the access that I have to my political scientist at home explained in the realm of refugee management, managing refugees.
Yeah.
If refugees, Hamoud, if Namibia with its 3 million Namibians takes in 2 million refugees from a combat zone, it is a force of destabilization. That is 2 million refugees will destabilize your country. It came out in the...
But I feel like we're going to get back to the British on this one. Where did the refugees come from?
That's what I'm going to explain now.
Uh-huh.
So, after Israel was Muslims now constituted in the 1950s, coming this way.
And we are back to the British.
So, yes. And which was an issue, obviously, of the British. So, the first sort of like their internal conflicts there of the West Bank and the Palestinians and the Israelis was now started happening.
Yeah.
So, the first floods of refugees ran to Lebanon, to Syria, to the Kingdom of Jordan, and to Egypt. Now, remember back in 7 October, was it 2024 or 2023? When did this new fight start?
That was... Was 2023.
2023, ne? This Gaza fight.
Yeah.
Back in 2023, when the conflict began in December that year, the Egyptians said they will close that bridge that leads into the Sinai Peninsula of Egypt. The reason why the Egyptians closed the border was because the Egyptians said, we have enough Palestinian refugees in our country. They will become a destabilizing force if we take any more. Remember, Gaza has 5 million people in that thing that is as big as Windhoek.
Yeah.
Yes, guys, I'll say it again. There are 5 million people living in Gaza, which is the size of Windhoek. The size of Windhoek, Helmut.
You know, that refugee, in terms of numbers, that refugee being a destabilizing factor to your country, that's a very interesting one. Because after the Second World War, the British lords ships full of people from Europe, dropped them in Palestine, and now have Israel.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Then there was also the other scenario. If you want to look at an ugly scenario also of immigrant populations that influence... negatively influence native populations across the colonial spectrum, the colonial history of the world.
You know, now when you look at it, that it makes a lot of sense.
It is, and it comes through from colonialism.
Immigrants who left Europe in Mayflower landed in now the Americas and chaos.
Okay. You call them immigrants. They were chased out of their own country by their own king.
King George III?
Yeah. Those guys that landed there in that first colony, the one that the one that was known as the Ghost Colony, Roanoke. Have you heard of Roanoke? So Roanoke, which happened, no, it happened under Elizabeth. Elizabeth the first. First. Yeah.
Yeah.
It happened under Elizabeth.
Oh, that woman was savage.
Those guys landed there, ne? And then 3 years later, the original captain that came, that brought those settlers with him to look for new greener pastures somewhere else, he found most of the colony, the settlement, abandoned. And I watched something last night where apparently archaeologists in the United States who were just searching around that river area, because the river's name is Roanoke. And it's literally a river that leads from inland, what is now known as, is it West Virginia? No, it's not West Virginia. But, no, it's because this is like 100 years before the guys of Maryland, the guys that landed, where the official British government literally sent settlers again. So when you look at these scenarios, Hamoud, as the settler population.
Cape of Good Hope, apartheid. Man, that, you should write a book on that one.
As the settlers become more, ne? As these immigrants from Europe become more.
Yeah.
They bring along, which is one of the things that we knew from history, but we never connected the dots, was as the settlers come along, they bring alongside with them their cattle, their chickens, their pigs, their goats. They bring along with them all manner of illnesses. Because remember, the native populations in many parts of the world were living off the land.
South America.
Except for the South Americans.
They were not immune to a lot of diseases that Europeans were immune to.
Exactly. And the South Americans also had established, like, for example, the Mayans and the Aztecs, or no, the Mayans and the Incas, had established agriculture because the potato comes out of South America.
Yeah.
The potato doesn't come out of Europe.
Mm-mm.
So it's mostly the South Americans that also developed terraced farming. Do you know terraced farming?
Yeah.
It looks like steps. It's literally a hill. And it has got these levels to it.
Yeah, those must be the Incas. Have you seen the Andes Mountains?
Yeah, because they were living in such high altitude areas. Yeah. And literally, they knew that there was a water source at the top or that they received enough rainfall. So the rainfall just cascades downwards, but it actually is captured. It's like a step of like capturing, like a earth dam capturing mechanism where the water just flows over every level.
Different altitudes.
Yeah, and then each patch of land gets adequately, what's that word that they use?
Water distribution.
No, the other word in not in gardening, not the gardening one. The gardening one is watering. The one in agriculture. In
irrigation.
Yeah, gets adequate irrigation levels or its portion of irrigation. And so you ensure that the rainfall actively spreads across, you know, how you constituted your plantations. It was the South Americans that developed that. Now, think to yourself, Helmut, why haven't you seen that kind of technology, that kind of, not technology, it wasn't even technology. It was literally landscaping, what they did. It died out with the Spanish farmers that obviously came and took over, because now you need land clearing, slash and burn farmers. These are all techniques that the Europeans brought. Slashing and burning, you know, cutting down trees that you don't need. Then you burn up the excess firewood or you convert it into building materials.
Mm-hmm.
But you literally burn off any other vegetation, native vegetation.
Yeah.
So all things that the Europeans brought with them. You get to Australia, similar thing.
Same
as well.
Same thing, New Zealand.
But Australia's issue was weird.
Apart from being a holding cell?
No, it was firstly deemed as a holding cell.
Mm-hmm.
Because of what was happening in Europe, and specifically in the UK, because of the first industrial revolution, people were being pushed from the rural areas, like what Namibia is experiencing, to the urban areas. Now they come to the cities, they don't have skills. Suddenly you've got this new thing known as a factory. Suddenly you've got this new thing known as a steam machine. You don't need human power and donkeys and horses anymore. Now you need... These people need to go to school. They need to be able to count. They need to be able to calculate, to estimate, to measure, to write reports, to think on their feet, Helmut. And the scenario that obviously was being faced there was that it's either you fall in line with the system or you become a criminal.
Yeah.
And the best depiction of that is either, what was the guy's name? The Russian guy, Dostoevsky, who wrote Crime and Punishment and the other books. But before we continue, guys, we'll quickly take a short break.
At ShopRite, we've got everything you need for baby and more at the lowest prices. Save big on baby essentials like 36, 42, 45, 50, 58 or 68 Pampers disposable nappies for only 209 Namibian dollars 99 per pack. And Jolly Tots Baby Walker, all variants for only 299 Namibian dollars 99 each. Visit your nearest ShopRite and save big on deals for baby. Only available until 3 May 2026. ShopRite, lower prices you can trust always.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Power. A lot of people, when it comes to understanding power, they say, well, I've heard a lot of people recommend, Art of War by Sun Tzu, but I think that's a combination of both power and military strategy. But my go-to piece of literature when it comes to understanding power in its raw, brutality is The Prince by Machiavelli. You can't go wrong. It's less than 100 pages long. Now, when it comes to understanding power for me, it's The Prince. And, the thing is, anyone that have read The Prince by Machiavelli will tell you that that guy was flat out crazy. Because he's writing the book like he doesn't live in a society that has morality, you know, that considers morality. At least a lot of people, you know, consider the presence of morality in terms of, in terms of human conduct.
But he didn't come from a rich family.
No, he didn't. He worked for one, and his observation of power was very brutal.
Yeah, and which means he was technically obsessed.
Yeah, that's the word.
Because I read The Prince. I've got a copy of The Prince, but a summarized version, a very thin thing.
Unless I have the wrong copy, but the one I have is also less than 100 pages long.
And then it's the same one, yeah.
Because
he's literally speaking as if he's, okay, he's giving strategy, supposedly.
Yeah.
But the strategy is based around a feudal system. So what does a feudal system mean? You need one nutcase. I'm talking about an unelected guy. And you concentrate power around him.
Yeah.
Which doesn't sound,
bad idea.
It doesn't sound like Namibia.
Bad idea.
It doesn't sound like any modern societies, except for obviously if you're, what's the country's name? I think it's Thailand that has the king.
Yeah,
or the king of Bhutan.
Thailand is also monarchy, and so is Bhutan.
Yeah. I don't know if it's Bhutan or Thailand, but the guy that's the king that's like, or the prince that's like the, he's like a very eccentric character.
Must be Thailand.
Yeah, it's Thailand's guy, yeah. He's the guy that has like one of...
tendency of going viral.
No, but he's got like one of only two made. There's a specific car. They only made two of this car. And he's got the other one. So, it's not to say that this guy's got power. He's obviously just chopping a lot of benefits that he's getting as a royal in his own country. But Machiavelli's The Prince, Hamoud, speaks to military strategy. And military strategy, in essence, is in the new perspective of where humanity wants to go to, war is not on the cards. Hence the reason why I don't know what's happening in Africa. Where one minute, those that love what Traore was getting up to in Burkina Faso, are completely silent after he said that elections is a waste of time. The elections authority in Burkina Faso is supposedly a waste of money. Having a parliament, because that was the other thing that he also dissolved, having a parliament is a waste of space. Do you guys see literally what happens when you go and back soldiers? Soldiers don't know how to rule. They just think it's me, me, and me. So yeah. And, yeah, Helmut, you were still asking about the refugee thing.
Yeah,
do you still want me to go on about the refugee thing?
Oh no, there's something that I want to point out from there. Is it the African Union guys here?
Yeah.
Why I think this is just going to exist on this paper until someone actually comes up with money to implement it. It will just be on this document.
Look, I think SADC can do it, Helmut. I've got great value. I've got great faith in SADC. I just believe countries on the fringes of SADC, like Madagascar and DRC, and which are both French-speaking, and there's another country I'm forgetting, and probably Burundi and Malawi. I'm calling them the fringe SADC members.
Yeah.
Primarily because these guys, they have to, I think they need like extensive workshops in development.
You know why Israel is very strong? Apart from being backed by the US and basically the entire Europe, they invest a lot in military.
No, the US, they also get $100 million donation like that from the American government. Like, just like Egypt.
That donation is very questionable. But,
now, it's a donation. We all know Egypt gets it.
Yeah, Egypt.
$100 million. It's just like that. The US government budgets $100 million.
Yeah.
Like that to Egypt. And then I think it's more than that to Israel.
It's always more than that to Israel. Now, look, every time I read the history of China, especially about the 100 years of humiliation, I can't help but reach the same conclusion over and over again. The Chinese tried diplomacy by being nice only. It doesn't work. You need an army. You are not going to use it to run around causing chaos and, just sailing around your aircraft carriers, you're not doing that. You just have it at bay for defense just in case.
Yes, Amor.
If you don't have that, you can talk about international law as much as you can.
You want, yeah.
You can talk about that. Now, as much as I'm not a huge fan of Stephen Miller, I totally agree with him. If you don't have a military, you can talk about international law, UN charter, negotiation, diplomacy, you know. That does not mean anything.
Okay, so the moment we get an army as a united Africa.
Yeah, first of all, good luck. But second, go on.
We're definitely not going to get into a fight with someone.
You see, that's the thing. Look, I think the perpetual military, or more like political instability of the entire globe is built on basically a country trying to defend itself.
Yeah.
Yeah. About 100 years ago.
That's the supposed aim.
About 100 years ago, the US was just trying to survive from the British.
Until 1900.
Then they build up their, they buffed up their army to the point where they not only can they defend themselves, but they can also bully others. Well, guess what? Today, they are doing to other countries what the British did to them.
And apparently the British don't care if they had an independence or not, because apparently the American independence is like a footnote in British history. Well, we lost the territory. Okay, we moved on.
Look, the thing is, I think we can all agree with this. Lord Acton who said, power will corrupt, but absolute power, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And that's, there is no statement in history that's more true than that, because you can take the nicest guy, put him in the executive office right now. Chances are very high you're going to end up with a dictator the next day. That's because...
How much you're going very far for your example. Just go to churches.
There you go.
Okay, but I keep forgetting how much you come out of a family of pastors.
It's too... I'm sorry. Look, there's a reason why I broke the chain. I would be in church preaching. You know, come to think of it, I would be loaded, because it turns out Namibians are very easy to lie to. Now...
God. Okay, okay.
Someone gave up a whole house to a man of God. Get out of here. Now, look.
Now, who's paying that installment? Who's paying?
No, there was I think there was a swindling in terms of change of ownership. I just read in some print media. Now, the thing is, this is the theory that's coming out of the African Union with regards to sanctions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, sanctions are supposed to be coming out of the United Nations Security Council. It's supposed to be a collective thing. But the US can do that unanimously. Why? Because they have the military capabilities and the economic capabilities to do so. They do. And believe you me, if you took the US, if you took America's military and economic strength, and then you give it to any African country, or any developing country in Africa, Asia, North, or South America, it's just a matter of time before that country will start behaving exactly like the US is behaving today.
I don't think so, Ahmed.
Why? All you just need is one wrong guy in office, and you can see that already. Well, US is an excellent example.
No, but the United States has had. Where are we now? Since 1950?
Oh.
We're now 80 years later. Okay, so 80 years since 1950. Mm-hmm. No. When was the Korean War? Yeah, 1950 was the Korean War. Since 1950 in this direction, the US has been participating on the global front. So, anytime before 1939, you can consider the United States being in isolation. So, hence the reason why I said no.
Yeah.
What you will see happening if you take the US of today and you put it in any African country, the template, the power, the money.
Yeah, the power and the money.
The industrial. The ability to use your money as a global economic power tool.
Mm-hmm.
If you did that today to any African country, you would see complete dictatorship. Remember, Hamoud, why I said the Americans were in isolation.
Mm-hmm.
They had, like you said, Canada was to the north, was a British dominion.
Yeah.
At that stage, the term was used as a British dominion.
Mm-hmm.
The Mexicans were to the south.
And that term is, in terms of ownership of property, is still a significant part of...
Yeah, because King Charles has the title deed to Canada, which I think makes every Canadian Native American... Every Native Canadian completely bonkers, completely crazy.
The term
about the notion that someone else has a
halfway across the Atlantic Ocean
has the title deed to their country, who was not even born here, didn't grow up here. But guess what? Yeah, they got Prince Harry and his wife Meghan Markle to go and live there in Canada, because that's was where they went to live in Canada. I mean, it's completely weird. Australia is still under the same particular scenario. They're still a dominion of the UK. New Zealand is still a dominion of the UK. Even though the name Dominion has changed to something else, because the highest office, political office in Canada, Australia and New Zealand, is Prime Minister.
That part is, now that term Dominion, interesting enough, I ran into that word a lot doing property law.
Yes, Hamoud.
And you find it you find it all over from Latin. You find it all over, you know, property law, especially when you're talking about ownership.
Not the Latin word, not the naming, not the label, the identity to who owns this land, comes back to that discussion we had about terra nullius.
Oh yeah, and colonialism. Check.
If you were son, or you were aborigine in, which is also the word native, basically, or indigenous. That's what the word aborigine means. In New Zealand or in Australia. And you were not deemed to be to have any format of civilization. Then you didn't exist. You were not people.
Terra nullius.
So here's the concern, Helmut. This complete discussion of sanctions being used, and all this manner of other tools and mechanisms.
Yeah.
Because in this resolution that the AU has here,
it's the theory.
It's a lovely thing, specifically on the first page, the page of page 120, 210, sorry, the page of 210.
Yeah.
Where they say here nicely, after listing all these, it's the third thing, the fourth point.
Is it emphasizing?
The fifth one, reiterating.
Red writing.
Yeah, the pronouncements of the UN General Assembly and then the UN Human Rights Council, they list all those particular resolutions and decisions, and they go here, calling on states not to recognize unilateral coercive economic measures. But what has happened in history, Helmut? If one US president just goes like, I put complete unilateral sanctions on whoever, which country? You can think of it.
Yeah.
It's the whole of NATO decides to immediately change course from doing business with you.
Yeah.
The whole of NATO. Now, the whole of NATO is also basically the whole of the EU.
Yeah.
Who is the whole of the EU doing business with in Namibia? With Namibia.
The meat market is going to go bananas.
Yeah. The green hydrogen market will be impacted.
Your fish market.
Your fish market.
We just talked about the Norwegians dominating our February. Yeah.
The amount of equipment
February fish trades,
that we buy from them will go...
All gone.
All gone. The same for South Africa.
Oh, yeah. Your VW. Gone.
The same for South
and
Africa.
And
well.
Japan is also 90% of the time in line with us. So your Toyotas, all gone.
All gone. Your Toyotas, your Suzukis, you can think of it. All gone. So we have to ask...
Oh, also South Korea is in there, so goodbye Samsung.
The same too. Your Samsung phone suddenly doesn't work. All gone. So we have to ask this pivotal notion. Now,
yeah.
When you look at this template I gave you, and they are telling themselves, the AU member states or heads of state here in this resolution, that literally don't recognize any coercive. But here's the thing, Helmut, and this is literally what makes the AFCFTA so difficult to get off the ground. Unless Zimbabwe, that guy that was here back in last year at that AFCFTA, MSME, that conference that was here in 2024, remember?
Yeah.
The one we spoke about, where I saw the presentation by the guy that said he's a designer and he's planning on building Africa's first electric car. Unless he sets up the plant that mines the iron ore, that processes the iron ore, that makes the molding for the body parts and everything before it gets assembled as a car. Not just to do a Peugeot fish plant conversion situation.
Yeah.
But literally from start, from the mine to the showroom floor for the customer.
Yeah.
Unless we fill that gap. We can forget about making these statements.
Yeah, forget about that.
You can forget about making these statements. Another thing that's also puzzling from this particular statement, because it says not to recognize unilateral coercive economic measures and not to recognize or apply such measures or legislation imposed to any state across territorial boundaries which are contrary to recognized principles of international law, and stressing that unilateral coercive measures and legislation are contrary to the international law, international humanitarian law, the charter, and the norms and principles governing peaceful relations among countries. Okay, I'll stop. I'll pause there. Last week we did the discussion of the EU moving away from American tech, alternative tech.
Mm-hmm.
So, don't worry, guys. I'm also someone that's open-minded, ne? Helmut, there is a term known as trade substitution. I might not be saying it correctly because there might be a word missing here and there. But trade substitution, Helmut, is where you change a dependency situation. Meaning, if I want to make my own cars in Namibia, then I start giving subsidies to a collection of Namibian businesses to make and produce a prototype. And then that prototype has to lead to full production and market adoption in the country, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, this technically would go against, for example, in that context, the South Africans obviously would ask, hey, listen, why are you starting to manufacture your exact own cars, brands, and everything, Namibia? What are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's what's also...
Your market.
Because that's just what I kept saying. If no one can point to me in the SACU legislation between Namibia and South Africa, Botswana, Lesotho and Eswatini, that Namibia cannot make its own car. I'm not talking about bringing an established brand that's already in South Africa, bringing it to a converted fish factory in Balfour's Bay and then reassemble it. I'm not talking about that. I'm technically saying you make the aircon car. First of its kind. It runs on an aircon machine, and it's environmentally friendly. I'm talking about a brand new thing, a concept. We have not done that. We are not doing that on Africa.
You know why?
Why?
We talked about it already.
I know we spoke about
it. Research and development.
That too. Because
that's where it starts from.
Well, here's the funny thing also, Helmut. My for people who have seen how research and development also happens on universities, is literally it's instead of this theory that we've now worked up in Namibia that I now have gone to university, I now have a degree, and now I must find a job. Do you know that with that degree, Helmut, you can either go and study further and you are paid to study. Not you pay to study, you are paid to study. There's a word for it. It's known as tenure. It's a subsidy you get to research and to develop. And you do it for the university that you have. But I don't see those things happening at these universities we supposedly have in the movie. And I'm using the word supposedly today because we're on the cusp of participating in green hydrogen and all other manner of new age technologies. And still, you will find a Namibian out there who will ask the question of, what is this green hydrogen, Dwight? Still, till the day, Hamud, there will be a Namibian. You'll bump into them. I know you'll bump into one when you go home now.
Ish.
You'll be asked, please explain what green hydrogen is.
Dude, I had someone ask, what does UN stand for?
Hey, yay. You're not serious, Ahmed.
Oh, no, it wasn't. You know, the...
Well, don't tell me this is a buddy.
No, not a buddy, no.
I would have
not
stopped drinking that night.
No, not a buddy. This one friend of mine. They had a youth project, you know, the UN here in Namibia, they had a youth project, they call it, YAG, they say youth, they say G something, but it's a youth project that's basically being run under the UN here. And they had this project.
Is it Youth in Action?
It must be Youth in Action or something.
Something of that name.
Now, I'm assuming she's not listening because if she does, she's going to murder me for not knowing
the
abbreviation.
Oh, was it her the other day that we met?
She was basically part of the guys that were running the whole thing.
Yeah.
So they had to make more of this question and answer, just a random question and answer in the street.
Mm-hmm.
And then to just make, you know, asking the youth, anything. This was just a nearing.
So they were doing a vox pop.
A vox what?
A vox pop. Vox is an old Latin word. It's a thing that the Romans had. They called it like voice from the street.
Oh yeah, voice from the street.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they were just so they wanted those voice from the street basically filmed for their social media.
You can say vox pop, Helmut.
Vox pop.
Yeah.
Yeah. They wanted she made like two or three of those. So just going through them to edit and see which ones are just good for the for their promotion, for the promotion of their event. Came across one video of one poor girl. She looked like
the person she asked that asked.
It's a person. I would have murdered her.
Oh.
Look,
I was now sitting here with disappointment, Helmut.
Oh, no. Wait, you thought it was her? I would have murdered her.
Because I thought it was her.
I would have murdered her. Now, one video that she, this kid was like, what does UN stand for? And she had no clue. Okay, first of all, there was a time when that was me.
Mm.
Yeah, so I'm
same
not.
Same here. I won't argue.
Yeah, there was a time when that was me. If you met me in high school, but look, I knew what UN was in high school. Like seriously.
I also knew, but I would have had a different view
of
back then when I was probably also 19.
Now the thing is, when it comes to what's going on in the country, especially in the world of economics and politics, I've come to learn: get ready to not have a lot of friends.
True.
Yeah. Because 90% of them are interested in discussions I'm not interested in. And, when I bring up the discussion about the
impacting events.
The Office of the Attorney General's report on the fisheries fund.
Mm.
First of all, I have to start explaining what Office of the Attorney General is, who is the Attorney General,
no, and then audit, we get auditor, to the report. Auditor General,
who is the Auditor General, what's the Office of the Auditor General, and who is the Auditor General, and what is a report, and then we get to the report. Now I have to start from the Marine Resources Act and then explain what the Fisheries Observer Fund is and go all the way to
where we are now. So everyone is sober halfway through the discussion. Yeah.
Now, look, coming back to the reality of power, not the fantasy of power, guys, seriously, the reality of power.
Yeah.
You can't negotiate on the grounds of UN Charter, and with all the respect to the UN, you can't negotiate on a global stage on UN Charter and international law alone. You can't. You can try, but that's having a lot of faith in humanity. You're assuming that everyone will respect international law the same way. One thing we have come to observe is that while strong countries, many strong countries militarily, they don't care about the UN Charter.
You know, I would have gone for the UN probably being based in Europe, but then it would have looked, you know, a little bit severely imperialistic. I know I'm using a political term right now. I don't like using political terms because I like citing the history of events. But Addis Ababa has not been a safe position for the AU's headquarters even. Because Ethiopia is probably, I still have to check whether those emotions are still burning very healthily there in Ethiopia. But back in last month, there were rumors once again that the Tigray province with its Tigray government, and this is what even shocks me, for example, in countries, some African countries regarding how their political systems work. Helmut, I've never seen, but I'm seeing it in other countries outside of Namibia and South Africa, but I've never seen local government run for that region. Local government run from one ethnic group in the country.
You know,
the local government for that province is most the Tigray party. It's most the party that was in power since the 90s after that that other civil war that Ethiopia had in the civil war.
That one devastated the country.
Where that, what's that guy's name? Mengistu was in power, the socialist.
They had...
where they also had a civil war back
they
then.
They had starvation.
Yeah. So that situation right there where a political party is based on the identity of ethnicity from one region, from that province where the ethnicity comes from, because the political party's name is Mr. TPU or the TPLU, something like that. And it just speaks on Tigrayan issues. It just represents Tigrayan issues. When we see something like that, then you got to ask yourself the question, is that a healthy template for managing politics in your country? Unfortunately not, because you even see that kind of a conversation manifesting in Namibia. Conversations on ethnicity. Yes, they would use the word tribalism here in Africa, but you find the same tribalism discussion in Europe and you find it in the United States. You find it in Australia. You find it in New Zealand. You find it in South Africa. You will find it even in Japan, of all places. Definitely, you will find it even in Russia. The concern is politics on ethnicity is an ugly thing, because politics on ethnicity is what happened in Second World War in Europe. Led up to the Second World War in Europe?
Politics on ethnicity is what happened in Rwanda.
There's our...
Politics on ethnicity is a bad idea.
It is a bad idea.
Has always been a bad idea.
Now, here's the thing, Hamoud. We, as African governments, we are fixated with who is suffering from sanctions there. But we can't sort out the problematic politics on the continent around ethnicity. Who is deemed from what country or what particular scenario, or whether or not they are deemed to be part of the national identity. and what is the overall situation? Because here is a problem that has been positioned before. The problem is heterogeneous populations, according to political scientists, are prone. The countries that have heterogeneous populations are prone to break up than countries that have homogeneous societies. For example, like if you go to China, if you go to Japan, if you go to much of Europe, you know, you don't find one, you don't find multiple French identities. There's one singular French identity. There's one singular German identity.
But those guys have been kicking the heck out of each other all throughout the history, despite their similarities.
Yes.
And also sharing bloodline, by the way.
And ask yourself the question, how many genocides do you think they've committed throughout their history? How many? There was an interesting story I once read when I looked up the word, when I looked up the human history's first ever recorded genocide. It happened during, it was a Greek invasion of another Greek city somewhere there before the Roman empires. And it was the first ever recorded genocide in human history. It was written down. So you also have to ask yourself the question, how do homogeneous societies happen? How do they come about? And why is it that you've got a government like Namibia or a constitution like Namibia that protects diverse identities?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm obviously not, you know, using the word diversity in the sense of the new discussion that has come about, the LGBTQ plus discussion that has come from, specifically from a European and a North American perspective. I'm talking about what is there already in terms of ethnicities. And these particular scenarios are already things that are protected by international law and by UN Charter and by the resident constitution of a country. But when you look at a discussion of, okay, so how did colonialism happen? Okay, what happened in the countries that perpetuated colonialism? What happened in their countries? Then you find out it was things between the two Christian sides, Protestant, Catholic. I mean, the last iteration of such a particular conflict was mostly Irish conflicts.
Yeah.
Which led to the Good Friday Agreement that was signed in the 90s. And the British politicians that are so, for some reason, I don't understand how they do not know their history. They were willing, Helmut, to literally contravene an agreement that they signed with the Irish government for Brexit. The discussion was about where will the border between the EU and the UK end on the island of Ireland?
Mm-hmm.
Will it be between Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, and Northern Ireland,
which is part of the UK.
Which is a dominion of the UK. Or will it be in the Irish Sea between where the boats come from Scotland, Glasgow, to Belfast and Dublin, Ireland? Will it be in the Irish Sea?
Jeez.
And the British ministers under the previous Prime Minister, what was the guy's name? Rishi Sunak. They were arguing like the most ridiculous. Because I used to watch their parliament sessions on YouTube. I was like, how do these people not know that the moment you make an indication of how you are going to deal with customs and excise, ne? Mm-hmm. From the EU coming to your country, how are you going to put a border in the middle of the sea, Hamoud? Have you ever heard of such idiocy? And then when the Irish tell you, then okay, so that means our businesses can flood the Northern Irish market, then they're going like, no, we must put that border between Ireland and Northern Ireland. And everyone is now asking, so what are you actually saying? Because wherever the border will be, you will have to be liable for taxes. Border taxes.
So where are you going to put your respective immigration
controls?
Facilities? Yeah.
That was also the other thing, Helmut. Now, you know what's the most funniest thing ever that have happened between Rishi Sunak and before Keir Starmer became Prime Minister of the UK?
Yeah.
was that back in 2024, the Northern Ireland had like a thing of it like a national election, and one of the competing parties was Sinn Féin, the political arm of the still deemed a terror group to some extent of the IRA, which is known as the Irish Republican Army.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, guys, the IRA is not actually the army of the Irish Republic, but the IRA was the first sort of like identified terror group in the world back in the 1930s, I think, or in the 1940s. So Sinn Féin won the majority seat in Northern Ireland, and people were asking, does this now lead to the next conclusion part to say that they should have a united Ireland, that Northern Ireland now becomes part of the Greater Ireland scene? But that would mean, Helmut, that Northern Ireland, which is predominantly Protestant, and this is why I still highlighted the religious identity discussion in Europe, and the Republic of Ireland, which is predominantly Catholic, would that then mean that the Northern Ireland situation actively melts into the greater Republic of Ireland? Yes, that is ultimately what it means. But that would also mean then that they would have to subscribe to Irish laws and not to Westminster London laws. That would then also mean, since they would be subscribing to Irish laws, which are backed up by EU laws, they then become EU citizens.
From Brexit to Brexit.
But that discussion went very quiet, very, very quickly quiet. There's a guy that I also follow in terms of that discussion on YouTube. His channel's name is Maximilian Robespierre. Yes, he literally named himself.
Maximilian.
He literally named himself after the famous French lawmaker. So I was like, literally, listen to this guy. Because Robespierre was one of the French Republic philosophers. It was Robespierre and... What was the other guy's name? Jean-Jacques Rousseau? No? No, Jean-Jacques Rousseau was...
those are the modifiers for Athenian democracy into democracy as we know it today.
Yeah, but and we run on that democracy today. Yeah. So the particular template that we're looking at here is a template of, you know what, guys? In the world of 2026, what do we actually want? How are we actually going to achieve it? Because, Helmut, just saying, yeah, we don't like coercive unilateral actions being taken by one head of state. And we all know who issues sanctions.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why they can't just say, we don't like it when the US makes sanctions. Now they've got to write a fancy paragraph here that says, calling on states not to recognize his unilateral coercive economic actions or measures. Just say you don't like it when the United States issues sanctions, because it's only the US issuing sanctions.
Page 211, number 5, please.
Yeah, I'm a government of people of... Yeah.
The government of the people of the United States to lift the long-standing sanction imposed on the government and people of Zimbabwe to facilitate the socio-economic recovery of the country calls upon the government of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland to lift all sanctions imposed on Zimbabwe that it inherited. Pardon me. When it withdrew from the European Union in 2020, and all the additional sanctions that it adopted on its own, and we acknowledge the steps taken among other political dialogue, high level engagements between Zimbabwe and the European Union towards the removal of sanctions, and we further urge the European Union to take a requisite action to ensure that all remaining sanctions lifted. We call upon the United... Look, the point is, they are just, you know, you have, from number five, just going down. You have a lot of EU, US, EU, US just going on, especially in reference to the sanctions, you know, with Zimbabwe. Mm.
It is just about Zimbabwe.
Yeah, it is because it's African Union. You know, we are just well, focusing on Africa. But the thing is, okay, what if I say no?
Oh, Eritrea is also here, but I don't know who sanctioned Eritrea.
What if I say no?
On number nine. Just at the end. Yeah. There where your thumb is.
Yeah.
Because I mentioned Eritrea, but it's apparently urged the EU and the United States to lift the unilateral coercive sanctions imposed on Eritrea. Wow. Wonder what Eritrea did. Just for being a socialist, isolated state.
Did you see the, is it 29-point Palantir manifesto on the Palantir X page?
Not yet, Helmut, but I heard about the...
Oh, it's drive. Oh, I mean...
The substitution of humanity.
Yeah, the world of tech and the world of geopolitics, especially in terms of governance, is going bananas. Sorry. Numbers 5 and 12 actually caught my attention. Five and 12.
Because
on the manifesto, yeah, okay. On the manifesto, the Palantir manifesto. And by the way, Peter Thiel could not have come up with the most controversial name for his company, Palantir, seriously.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, that's asking for it. Now, number five says, the question is not whether AI weapons will be built, it is who will build them and for what purpose. Our adversaries, aka enemies, will not pause to indulge in theatrical debates about the merits of developing technologies with critical military and national security implications. They will proceed. Now, number 12 is one interesting one that basically builds on that, because number 9 and number 5 and 12 for me speaks too much, very much into national security, defense, and again, the need for military strength.
Mm.
Africa is not looking at that. We just, they're like, you know what?
Please remove the sanctions.
Yeah, international law. Please do something. No. Unfortunately, the world we live in doesn't work like that. It's like you running into Tura boys. They're asking for your phone and you're like, you know what? According to the, I'm coming from church, guys. In this verse in the book of Mark, you are not supposed to do this.
We must believe in
it. They will slap you with that Bible.
They will first laugh at you and then slap you.
Yeah. In geopolitics and global economics relations, Africa is that guy, very nice guy who is coming from a choir with a Bible and his phone in his pocket when it's dark, and he ran into Tura boys. And the best he can do.
And the Tura boys are the size of rugby players.
Yeah. And the best he can do is say, please, you know what? I'm appealing to your humanity here.
Please, I'm appealing to the better side of you.
I'm
hoping that you have parents that knew how to raise you properly as a schoolboy, as a good schoolboy. And then you just see 3-4 slaps and then the situation is settled.
The next thing you know, next Sunday, homeboy is not singing at church because he lost a few teeth. Now, South Africa is South Africa. And...
Oh, where did you come up with that joke, South Africa? This is not Mike Tyson jokes, ne?
Nah. Number 12 of that manifesto reads, you're going to love this.
Mm.
The atomic age is ending. The age of deterrence, the atomic age is ending. And the new era of deterrence built on AI is set to begin. From the look of things, these guys have been... From the look of things, working on replacing, and I like the word that they used in that. That's actually the part that that made that out of all the 29 points. That's my favorite, deterrence.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, if you look at the military power, in terms of nuclear military power, look at three countries: Russia, China, and the US. Throw the UK and France in that one. If you look at the military, the nuclear power these guys have, they know, all of them, they know that if they are to go to nuclear war with each other, they would literally, you know, erase the entire human race of the planet.
Mm.
They know that. So, now, here's the thing. They acquired these weapons to protect themselves, not to destroy themselves. And that's why I like the word deterrence being used in that, you know, being used in that part of the whole, you know, Palantir manifesto. Yeah. So that means deterrence is an excellent idea in terms of geopolitics.
Yeah.
You want to know who's using it? North Korea.
Yeah, but North Korea is obviously... What is that word, that label that they've got? A rogue nation.
No. Look, if North Korea is a rogue nation, North Korea is rogue because of them.
Exactly. And because North Korea literally borders onto China, so technically it's got a very big buddy right next to it.
Yep. So,
you know, it's not a... Who else is there? It's not a Venezuela sitting somewhere else isolated.
Ukraine had nuclear weapons.
Mm.
They were asked to give them up. Now they're up in smoke. Is it Libya had nuclear weapons?
Mm.
It gave them up in smokes. And who else had nuclear weapons and
Libya
gave them up?
But Libya is a bit weird.
Now here's the thing. Now the message.
Libya is not because of they had.
Wait, they didn't have.
Well, he wanted to get. Apparently, that's what
they wanted to get.
Yeah, but and the reason why they are up in smoke
mm-hmm.
is because of the Lockerbie bombing. They wanted to find a way, that's NATO. NATO, and especially Europe, they wanted mm-hmm. to find a way of destabilizing Libya.
No, look, the thing is, any leader that has pursued, that has basically, any leader on this planet that had made two decisions, just one of these two decisions, natural resources, nationalization, and acquisition of nuclear weapons, something happened to that country.
Yep.
Except North Korea. You know why? Because no one assumes whether, no one is suspecting whether or not North Korea has nuclear weapons.
Mm.
Everyone knows North Korea has nuclear weapons.
And everyone
because
knows.
Of that knowledge, it's an excellent deterrence.
They are testing new rockets every day.
Yeah, I know.
When they see that
every time he's bored, is like feel like launching one.
When they see there's a high level visit to Japan or South Korea, Kim Jong Un starts ordering. Hey, listen, guys, I think we need a new exercise. Is there a new rocket machine that you guys... Yes. What's that phrase that he's called? The Supreme Leader. And then they start testing new rockets, Kama, every time.
You know why I like looking at power from an individual standpoint? Like, just take an individual child or an individual human being. And you look at the aspects of power in your life alone.
Yeah.
And it always takes me to the joke that Dave Chappelle made at some point. That he was telling a story of one guy who was, he was black in the U.S. He was a slave. His master freed him. Guess what his first order of business was? He started trading in slaves.
Yeah.
It's
known as Stockholm Syndrome.
Like, guys.
Okay, it's a very perverse scenario of Stockholm Syndrome.
When it comes to power. And
but it's the only business he knew.
Yeah, and look, when I went into... Oh, yeah, that's actually true. It was the only business he knew.
Yeah.
So, and there are actually a lot of people that you'll find. You'll find a whole list of people that were freed, that were former slaves, who ended up owning slaves.
Yeah. I mean... Look... The history around slavery, Hamoud, is an argument.
I will form a political party today pointing out everything that's wrong.
With what? With slavery?
No. Everything that's wrong in all ministries and all SOEs and all that. Now,
I saw something like that today.
Yeah, just take me and put me in the position that I'm telling, that I'm telling you that if I'm in that position, I'll change this and this. Put me in that position.
And you know what's the worst part? When
and the worst of
when one of the standing committee people asked a question like you just framed a question how it was asked, but I saw something like that today was literally if the Ministry of Justice people did their presentation before the whole proceedings began, all of the questions would have been answered. I'm not giving
wait. Why didn't you all start with him?
Because apparently those guys were not there yet. They had to come from another engagement. The Ministry of Justice guys. But if you look at, like you framed it now, you will go and start a political party just to point out the faults of what's in the system. Like, I don't, ultimately what happened in the US with Doge. It was supposed that was the same selling point also.
And thanks to Eagle FM and Dwight, I know where to find the reports that has all the faults in all ministries and so it'll be very easy to point out. But the thing is, you are just
especially the performance reports.
Especially the performance reports. But the thing is, you are asking now not to give those guys that perform terribly in their performance reports a leeway. But the thing is, even if I was in charge of that organization, you can bet there are certain things that will, that will go wrong, that will need addressing.
Yeah.
It's never going to be 100% okay. According to the good book in the this is where my biblical, wisdom now comes in. According to the good book in the book of Revelation chapter 12, war started in heaven. I was like, oh, hang on a second. War started where now?
In heaven.
So,
oh yeah, Hamoud, go and watch that documentary that I became sick and tired of as a peer in my 20s, Ancient Aliens, and I was like, now where are these ancient aliens, doch?
Now?
That documentary is still running, that documentary show. Still running, still with a weird guy with his hair standing like this. He looks like a pineapple that was shocked, was somehow... And was left out in the sun with a suntan, and then he came back in. It's just a weird. It started out. If you're looking for exciting conversation that appeals to the sci-fi side of what you like, mm-hmm. In entertainment, it's a wonderful thing to go watch. But the moment you realize that the show tries to sell you on. Think of aliens, but you've never seen an alien in your life. Then you're like, what are you saying? What are you saying to me?
Now, speaking of aliens, NASA scientist keeps disappearing. Interesting.
Hamoud, that's affiliated to...
I've seen Oppenheimer. I know classified...
And that's the Iranians, Hamoud.
Say what?
The big suspicion I have, because Fox News did that presentation. They must be the only ones that did that presentation.
Yeah.
About the disappearing scientists.
Yeah.
But it's actually their deaths. Because four.
There are those that disappeared.
Those that have disappeared. The big suspicion, Helmut, that you can always look forward to is that this is.
An enemy.
This is an enemy nation that is bumping off. Leading research scientists, and most of these scientists were all affiliated to a specific space program at NASA.
Okay,
a specific rocket program.
If it's Iran, I'm not shocked because, why do these guys keep killing each other, scientists? Because Iran, I imagine how I can only imagine. I think they have lost more than 10, if not more, nuclear scientists.
But it's also the same basis that what's his name. That happened in the Second World War.
So, in other words, being terrible at math and...
Einstein was a German. It was Oppenheimer that got them in. Einstein was a German. The other guy who perfected the calculation on the atomic bombs, the other German guy.
Wait, isn't that Einstein?
It was Einstein and another guy. There were two Germans. The one was atoms. The other one was rocket. Because if you go read up about before World War II, the Germans they literally had rocket clubs, Helmut.
Rocket what?
Clubs. Who could build a rocket and then just launch it. You know, like having fireworks in the park?
This is one thing I admire about
them. They were doing these things in the 1920s and 19...
Other people have book clubs.
Yeah, these guys...
And then they are Germans.
These guys had rocket clubs. Just like they had bicycle clubs when the bicycle was invented, from the 1800s coming into the 20th century. Yes, you could see in terms of a society modernizing based upon the technologies that are brought in. And it's one of the things that makes me very envious.
Yeah.
Because you can clearly see a society like Namibia wants, we want to modernize, Helmut. But then I just drive 90 kilometers south, and then, you know, a five-year-old insults me on the street, and I'm wondering who taught this five-year-old manners. And there's nothing I can do, because primarily, you know, that's something that is taught out of the house. But in the European context, they literally had continuous shifts after they experienced industrialization.
Mm-hmm.
There were these continuous modernization shifts that you kept saying, yes, it led to global wars. Yes, there were a couple of them that were colonial powers.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was a period of severe combat. I mean, Helmut, when the first engine, combustion engine was researched, in the 1900s, no, in the 1800s, from 1890 leading into just before 1910, that 20-year period, there was a war. There was an engine, a steam engine, that ran just on water.
I don't think I would like that if I had an oil company.
Then they spoke about the electric car that Macron got back in 2025. The full electric vehicle as the presidential car. There was the very first electric vehicle was built by a Frenchman back in that same period of 20 years. And that's where you can see innovation, research and development was at its core, was literally running wild. But here's the thing, Helmut. Here's the particular discussion. For this resolution, these resolutions by these heads of state to actually make sense in any meaningful way,
mm-hmm.
we literally have to, if we mine the iron ore here in Namibia, not in Windhoek, not in Windhoek, here in Namibia, it must be partially processed and cleaned, still in Namibia. Then we need to have another company that literally makes various metal parts and products for other industrial applications, still in Namibia. Mm-hmm. And then you need to have the innovators, the researchers, the developers, the actual industrialists taking place. Have you realized, Helmut, we don't have industrialists in Namibia?
Again, research and development.
No.
What?
No, Helmut. Not even Dangot is an industrialist. And people think he's an industrialist. He's not actually an industrialist. His actual business started from agriculture. He's not an actual industrialist. An industrialist was someone that they
Lamborghini started from agriculture.
Who?
Lamborghini started from agriculture.
Yeah, but they built engines.
Yeah.
Helmut, why are we not building engines? Why are we not building power units? Why are we...
How are you asking all those questions with a straight face?
I have to ask this question with a straight face, Helmut, because the only reason you can be independent from any sanctions is literally if you internalize and you practice trade substitution to an extent. And in order to achieve trade substitution or adequate levels of trade substitution, we're talking about, yes, Namibia would have to have a factory on the other side of Otjiwarongo for building machines, whatever machines you're looking at. Instead of now, let's say the Ministry of Agriculture having to buy tractors that are imported from South Africa, that are imported from the United States, John Deere tractors, you build your own tractors. Many people don't believe that Lamborghini, like Helmut just said, started in agriculture.
Yep.
Lamborghini is a tractor company, which is now owned by Audi.
All has to start somewhere.
You have to start somewhere. But before we continue, guys, we quickly take a short live read and we come back right after that.
Yeah.
Davicie University for the 2026 July applications that are now open for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Level 8. Admission requirements for candidates are as follows. Candidates must have a recognized nursing qualification at NQF Level 7 or higher from any recognized higher learning institution. Candidates must be a registered nurse or midwife with the Nursing Council of Namibia or the Health Professions Council of Namibia. Candidates must have a minimum of 2 years working experience as a nurse or midwife in any health facility. And candidates must be able to write a short essay describing the motivation for pursuing postgraduate diploma in community health nursing. Qualification duration is 1 year. Mode of delivery is full-time. And for more information, please call 081-403-6406. Velvice University, where everyone is an achiever. Straight faces aside, yes, Helmut.
There's something. Let me take you back to what you said earlier about the. Is it what aircraft carrier is that? Did he say is in the Indian Ocean?
The George H.W. Bush.
They are headed to the Middle East.
Is what you think?
Is
what you think, Helmut? What you think?
Look,
in fighting, Helmut.
Now look.
Fighting, remember what you just explained now about the Hassan Fovich and Tipa guys, and I told you, imagine them being a bunch of rugby players, and the victim is a guy. Africa has now come at the victim coming from church with his holy book and preaching peace. Helmut, I know you've seen fights.
Mm-hmm.
The person angling, the person always intimidating. If you've never observed body language, always look at the person and antagonizing or intimidating with their body language. They go and say things to pull the other person into the fight, into the conflict.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's words being said. Sometimes it's how they walk or the posture they have.
I don't think you need an aircraft carrier for Namibia. Just tell First Rand Group to pull over, to pull away all their, you know, all their subsidiaries, and we're cooked.
That is true also. That is true. You're right.
Yeah. And according to the Wall Street Journal, and this is 20 hours ago, that three U.S. aircraft carriers and their accompanying warships are now sailing in the waters of the Middle East, giving Trump, you know, his additional warships to enforce his blockade of Iran, of Iranian ports, and more firepower should he decide to resume strikes on Iran. The USS, point out that the USS, USS George H.W. Bush arrived in the Indian Ocean after traveling around the southern tip of Africa to, you know, to reach the Middle East, according to U.S. Central Command. And then you have the, and there are three. They have the USS H.W. Bush, and you have the USS Abraham Lincoln, USS Gerald Ford. Abraham Lincoln would not like this. Now the thing is, aircraft carriers are never alone. They are always surrounded by, well, last time I checked, either, you know, battleships or destroyers, and there is, you know, maybe even a submarine or two.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a whole, when you see an aircraft carrier, just know that that crew has a big enough army to take over a lot of small countries. Militarily. But the thing is,
Helmut, just two airplanes on that boat.
What?
Just two airplanes from that boat.
Oh.
will be able to suppress many African nations.
Yeah, just two.
Just two.
Forget the aircraft carrier. And
forget the submarines on the boat.
Yeah.
Just two planes. Just two pilots. With each one with their plane.
Yeah.
Will suppress the whole airspace of Africa.
You know, the painful thing is we went through that with Libya. Your African Union guys were told,
stay out of
Libyan airspace.
Yo, but Libya was an ugly... In Afrikaans, now we've got a word known as babak, Helmut. The word babak is an ugly term which means it's worse than the word ganging up on someone.
Yeah.
Because the word babak is... Okay, since Afrikaans has a pretty, you know... has a pretty crass characteristic to it sometimes, depending on how you pronounce it sometimes. But the word babak just means it was such a one-sided fight.
So it wasn't a fight, it was a beating.
It was the one that goes whoop, A-double-S, that kind of situation. Because, I mean, the fight itself, that wasn't a fight.
Nah, that was
the
not
NATO
a fight.
Guys tell themselves that they fought a fight.
That was not a fight. That's why I'm saying that was not a fight. That was a beating.
You are even making it sound euphemistic, Helmut. We can't apply euphemism if the fight was so one-sided.
No, I'm saying fighting entails their punches coming from the other side.
He couldn't even make a fist. Uh-huh. That was the worst part. You can't even show that you've got a bicep somewhere.
So, look, there's a quote that is mostly attributed to who is this Henry Kissinger.
Mm.
But the history, now, I like the history of that quote, because it always takes me back to Sanskrit, basically the first, the 3rd century India, BC. But what it basically points out is, what Henry Kissinger is pointing out, and this was the Secretary of State and Chief of Staff, I think, but I'm not sure about the Chief of Staff, but under Richard Nixon.
Mm.
There are no permanent friends in politics, only permanent interest.
Yeah.
Yeah. You are friends today because your interests are aligned.
Yeah.
The next day, if your interests are not aligned, you are not friends.
Yeah.
The U.S. basically, literally prepped up Saddam and helped him topple the guy that was in power. And then he woke up one day and was like, you know what? I want to sell my oil in a different currency. And it was like, okay, you know what? Friendship over. Now you're an enemy. By the way, we have every reason to believe you have weapons of mass destruction. They bomb the heck out of the guy. Like, you are friends today, enemy tomorrow. That's geopolitics. And Africa is going, you know what? Please stop sanctioning. Build an army. But the thing is, to build an army, you need money. And Africa is a continent of stingy men's association. Have a good weekend, people.
Which is true.
We don't look, man. The,
which is true.
The African Union headquarter is a donation.
Yeah. Much of Africa.
That's how painful it is.
Much of Africa's particular plans is donated.
Yeah.
And we've got David here, guys. Just welcoming David after we've misappropriated some time.
So what did you say again? Can you please repeat that?
Look, I'm saying Africa is a continent full of stingy men's association. Yeah. All the way to the leadership.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that because look, the African Union, I swear, I wish I did not know that. The African Union itself was funded and built.
But you know, if you listen to the current conversation, I hope you have listened, the current conversation between Museveni, Aliko Dangote, and William Ruto, you understand that it's going to give a lot of people stress, particularly those who depend on African minerals.
Because, I can tell from the names.
And you look at what they are discussing about infrastructure, I think all African leaders should do that, because I used to have different, views about Museveni. I think now he become the replacement of Mugabe in terms of wisdom. You only think about him when he's gone. He's making a lot of sense, especially when he say no.
Oh no, I think I've been reading more about the sun, but
in terms of raw materials, he indicating to say nobody is going to export raw materials from Uganda. Gold is there. Apparently the Canadians, they come and they said they want uranium. Then he asked them, what are we going to do with uranium? No, we're going to produce electricity. And then he said, I heard rumors that there are people here in Uganda who also want electricity. Can you come and produce here? But I think it's a good point that you make. Africa has money. We just don't have patience and also do what we can do with our resources. Because the calculation is already indicating to you that taking out raw materials from your country and you get peanut, not even with butter, then you understand that it's not working out.
Tombi, money is not a problem.
Yeah.
The problem is how to use it. Now, when you see, if you're an African seeing that, replace money with natural resources and you will nail it.
Yeah,
indeed. So, Switzerland has a gold vault. DRC doesn't.
Oh, no, here's the best example.
No.
Germany makes the whole coffee that I drink in Namibia. Comes out of Germany.
Using?
Yes, it is.
Coffee from?
Coffee from Africa.
Of course.
I did not know that Uganda has...
Nestle makes chocolate.
Coming out of Africa.
From cocoa, coming out of Ivory Coast and Ghana. Caramel. The biggest supplier of caramel is Madagascar.
And you find it in every food. Every food.
Oh, all right. Until Sunday for me, when I'm just going bananas on making fun of. On Sunday we are making fun of married people. Don't miss it from me, 11 to 1.
I'll also see you guys early morning on Sunday morning as well, where we'll obviously be excited, try to innovate, try to not be serious, but be serious from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. Because obviously we're having deep, particular discussions. And on that note, stay tuned for David right after the break with the BES.
I wanted to say I'll see you in the next 2 seconds, but it's fine. I'm still here.